produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Free Culture Radio. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, nothing about us without us. The International Network of People Who Use Drugs recently organized a webinar entitled We Are the Evidence, Community-Led Responses on Decriminalization, Harm Reduction, and COVID-19. It was a discussion on why and how people who use drugs should be at the center of advancing policy towards decriminalization of drugs, drawing from examples of peer leadership on harm reduction and the COVID-19 response. We're going to hear from some of the speakers. First, here's Annie Madden. She's a PhD candidate at the University of New South Wales.
So as was said, I was one of two consultants that was employed by Input to work on the research and the report that we are launching today. I don't have very long to present to today, so I just wanted to let everyone in attendance know that I have prepared a slightly longer version of these slides that we will make available to attendees after this, which does go into a little bit more detail on some of the findings from the report and from the research. So, don't feel the need to sort of take all this in really quickly. You will have an opportunity to be able to look at those slides at your leisure. So with that said, I'll just get into it from here. So next slide, thanks. Thank you. So there we are. There's the cover of the report. The report, as you can see, is titled Drug Decriminalisation, Progress or Political Red Herring, Assessing the Impact of Current Models of Decriminalisation on People Who Use Drugs. Before I go any further in talking about the report, I just want to acknowledge my co-consultant on this report, which was Pascal Tangwe, and co-author as well, and of course Judy Chang, who was a co-author on this. I also want to take this opportunity to acknowledge the study participants who gave very generously of their time. And of course, this report, this amazing report we're launching today, would not have been possible without their commitment and their energy. So thank you to the participants. Next slide, thanks. So I want to talk a little bit about why we did this research. So as many of you will be aware, over the past decade, there have been increasing claims that we are moving towards a critical turning point in international drug policy. Many are claiming a virtual new dawn in drug policy reform, citing recent moves towards decriminalisation by now almost 50 countries as evidence of this progress. But despite several recent reviews on the impacts and outcomes of decriminalisation models, none have specifically included the perspective of those most affected by these reforms, which of course is people who use drugs. So it was in this context that Input identified the need to conduct a peer-driven research project into the impacts of current approaches to decriminalisation from the perspective of people who use drugs. We had two key aims in doing this research. First was to bring a critical lens to claims of progress in this space. And secondly, we wanted to interrogate concerns that reforms are frequently too narrowly focused on cannabis reform alone, and or often simply replace one set of sanctions for another without paying sufficient attention to issues of injustice, stigma, and human rights violations. Next slide. So how did we go about doing the research? Well, as I said, it was a peer-driven research project. We took a two-stage approach to this. The first was a literature review, and that identified existing models of decriminalisation that are being utilised, the countries and jurisdictions involved, and key aspects of their implementation. And we use this to inform our selection of our focal countries for stage two. And stage two was a series of qualitative interviews. We used a purposes sampling approach that ensured a balance across different regions, coverage of different models, and a diversity of views. We then did a total of 8 in-depth qualitative interviews that were at least sort of an hour long. Some were considerably longer, and they were conducted with 12 respondents from countries including Costa Rica, Estonia, Kyrgyzstan, the Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, Uruguay, and Vietnam. The respondents were all people working at organisations representing people who use drugs, and the majority of the participants were people who use drugs themselves. We used a framework for our approach to the sort of the models of decriminalisation that are under utilisation in the world. We used a model that has been developed by Hughes et al. In work that they have done for the Irish government. We slightly adapted that model. Their model has 6 key models of decriminalisation. We slightly adapted that to land on sort of 5 key models that we based our report around. And you can look at the full report for more information on that and a full reference for the work from Hughes et al. Next slide. So the key areas that all respondents were asked to provide their views on, we looked at sort of 6 of these key areas or topics, if you like. The first one was policing, detention and other sanctions. And this other sanctions included threshold amounts and administrative sanctions and fines. Second was looking at stigma and discrimination. The third issue was surveillance and privacy. Fourth was access to health and social care. 5 was meaningful involvement, and the last section was the way forward. Thank you. Next slide. So what did we find? Just very broadly and quickly now. So what we found was that despite some positive impacts on policing and interactions with people who use drugs, decriminalisation measures have not necessarily or consistently translated into better outcomes for people who use drugs. This is largely because the models adopted are not full decriminalisation, and they continue to utilise strategies of control and surveillance and/or to pathologise people who use drugs as victims needing treatment and rehabilitation. Many of the decriminalisation approaches continue to be based on arbitrary quantity thresholds that do not recognise the reality of drug use or dependence, with extremely negative outcomes for people who use drugs. Many countries have simply replaced criminal penalties with administrative sanctions, and the most common of these are fines. But fines are often too high, and when they're combined with poverty and other factors, they can lead to more, not less, criminalisation, including charges, arrests, arbitrary detention, and more incarceration and imprisonment. Whether the punishments imposed on people who use drugs are administrative sanctions or criminal penalties, all participants ultimately agreed there is a need to remove these sanctions completely. Next slide. Further findings were that although stigma and discrimination may have decreased in some settings since decriminalisation, once again, these outcomes are ultimately being undermined by ill-designed models of decriminalisation. These ill-designed models have given rise to increased monitoring and surveillance, including use of routine urine drug testing without consent to pressure and coerce people who use drugs into decisions and actions. Decriminalisation laws and policies have contributed to facilitating access to harm reduction services in some places. However, this is not the case everywhere. And in some countries, there was no real or lasting improvement in harm reduction or access to other health and social healthcare services. Despite decriminalisation, there are ongoing problems with drug dependence treatment in many countries, including serious concerns about the continued forced compulsory treatment of people who use drugs, in Asia in particular. Finally, it was noted that decriminalisation policies are being designed and implemented with little or no consultation with people who use drugs. And even where consultation has occurred, advice is not always taken seriously. Participants felt there was still much to do towards the meaningful involvement of people who use drugs. Last slide, thanks. So what did we recommend? What did INPUD recommend based on these findings? We have five key recommendations. First is that all models of decriminalisation must fully decriminalise people who use drugs. That means removing all administrative sanctions, mechanisms of monitoring and surveillance, coercion and punishment for use and possession of drugs. This includes ending compulsory detention where it exists. Secondly, that people who use drugs and their community-led organisations must be involved in all stages of the reform process, including the design process and the provision of accessible and credible information to community on any proposed reforms or changes. Third, that full decriminalisation must also include specific strategies to end stigma and discrimination among people who use drugs and ensure adequate funding for such interventions. Fourth, that full decriminalisation must include scale-up and expansion of access to harm reduction and social care for people who use drugs, relevant to the local context and needs. And finally, once full decriminalisation is adopted, it should only be as a step on a continuum that has as its clear and ultimate goal the full legal regulation of all drugs in a timely manner.
That was Annie Madden, a PhD candidate at the University of New South Wales. She spoke recently on a panel entitled, We Are the Evidence, Community-Led Responses to Decriminalization, Harm Reduction, and COVID-19, which was organized by the International Network of People Who Use Drugs. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear more. Richard Elliott is the executive director of the HIV Legal Network.
What I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about, I think, complements the INPUD report nicely because it's a bit of an update on advocacy that is happening by civil society and developments that have been happening in Canada as we build momentum toward decriminalization. And I think the report from INPUD and the points it makes are quite timely and indeed quite aligned with what civil society is proposing in the Canadian context. Next slide, please. So over the last five-year period for which we have detailed data, we have seen more than 470,000 drug arrests made in Canada. And according to our analysis, more than 70% of those were cases in which charges were laid for personal possession or simple possession, that is possession for personal consumption. Next slide, please. What has been happening at the same time, of course, is the worst overdose epidemic in Canada's history, and that has only exacerbated and intensified calls for change to policy. And there is growing recognition and public support for decriminalization to at least some degree in at least some form. And of particular note, last summer, the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, so police chiefs from across the country, also released a report in which they recognized that prohibition and the criminalization of simple possession was not working and that there was a need for transformative change. Next slide, please. However, there are different conceptions of what decriminalization means, as has just been pointed out by Annie and in the INPUD report. And some of those are, in our view, insufficient and unsatisfactory. So the proposal from the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, welcome though the recognition is that criminalization is a problem, in fact, proposes to maintain some of the very same problematic provisions that INPUD has just highlighted in their report. That is, while it would remove criminal sanctions for simple possession, for personal consumption, it would nonetheless maintain potentially other kinds of sanctions, including fines, and police would play a role in their view of how decriminalization would work in diverting people to treatment and other support services. There has also been an important development from the Federal Public Prosecution Service, which is responsible for prosecuting drug offenses in most jurisdictions of the country, a guideline that prosecutors should only be taking forward prosecutions for simple possession in what they consider to be, quote, the most serious cases where there are other kinds of concerns at play in the facts of the particular case. And they too would envision or are suggested to divert cases that they aren't prosecuting to other alternative measures from the criminal justice system. So these are important recognitions of the fact that criminalization is causing harm and needs to end, but they're half measures in response at best. Next slide, please. There is also federal legislation that would embody, if it were to pass, which is a very real question as to whether it will, this diversion approach that directs, at least in the case of simple possession charges, people to be diverted out of the criminal legal system. From the perspective of civil society, of course, including people who use drugs, there are any number of problems, and they are nicely laid out in the report that Annie has just presented as to why this continued coercive approach and response to drugs, and in particular to simple possession, carries a number of problems and ultimately is insufficient if we are talking about decriminalization. There are a number of human rights concerns that remain. It continues the surveillance and control of people who use drugs. And as we have already seen in Canada and in so many other jurisdictions, there is a disproportionate impact of criminalization now on some of the most marginalized and on racialized people, particularly Black and Indigenous communities and people in Canada. And there's every reason to think that that would continue under a decriminalization light approach. Next slide, please. So from the perspective of civil society, including a loose coalition of organizations, including groups of people who use drugs, there is a need for a more robust and fuller definition and understanding and vision of decriminalization that includes a number of different features. In particular, first and foremost, it requires the removal of all criminal sanctions and all other penalties or coercive interventions in cases of simple possession of all drugs. And this, I think, is quite consistent with the recommendations that INPUD has just presented. And in particular, there are specific things that are of concern that must be removed from the operation of the law as part of a full decriminalization agenda, including an end to any administrative penalties, mandatory health assessments, fines, appearances before dissuasion commissions, confiscating people's substances or paraphernalia, imposing restrictions on people's travel or contact, the turn to drug treatment courts as a quasi-coercive alternative to criminal sanctions or any other kind of coerced or involuntary treatment or ostensible health measures, sometimes things that are not in fact health measures being passed off as such. It will also be important to automatically expunge previous convictions that people have received for simple possession or other penalties related to other breaches of orders that may have been attached to simple possession, like probation orders, bail conditions, etc. And of course, it will be important to deal with how police are operating on the ground because and educate police and set strict rules about when it is that police are having interactions with people in relation to drug offenses or perceived drug offenses. In addition to decriminalizing the resources that are currently devoted to prosecuting people for drug possession charges should be redirected to other kinds of evidence-based health and social services that remain inadequate at this point. Next slide, please. But there is also a question about going beyond simply the decriminalization of simple possession, recognizing the reality, of course, that people, including people who use drugs for various reasons, will share with friends and acquaintances. Sometimes people will purchase on behalf of others, in part to reduce the risk of coming to the attention of police and all of the negative consequences that can flow. And of course, as we know, and as has already been mentioned, it is not uncommon that some people will be sharing or selling specifically as a means of livelihood or to support their own use. And it is not a good use of public resources, and it is actually quite harmful to continue to criminalize this kind of activity. And so the vision that civil society is developing is one that includes the decriminalization of the sharing or selling of limited quantities of substances. Next slide, please. So how might this be achieved? Well, there are two ways in particular, both of which are being pursued. The first is that under the existing drug law in Canada, which is federal law applicable throughout the country, the federal Minister of Health actually has the statutory authority to exempt any person or class of persons from any provision of the federal drug law if it is in the public interest. And there is a call on the federal health minister endorsed by more than 180 organizations across the country at this point for her to proactively issue an exemption that would apply nationwide to all people, exempting everyone from prosecution for simple possession under the current law. In the longer term, what is needed, of course, is legislative amendments to that law, the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act, to remove the criminalization of simple possession entirely, but also to amend the trafficking provisions to limit the criminalization of small-scale selling and sharing. In either of these approaches, the question of quantities, of course, naturally and quickly arises. And I think here the point to make, and we can have a longer discussion about this later, is the importance of decriminalizing, at the very least, possession of quantities for personal use and potentially for small-scale sharing and selling. The definition of those quantities has to be done carefully and in a rights-compliant way that includes, of course, the perspectives of people who use drugs and that will evolve over time, taking account of the realities of people's drug use and of conditions in the drug market. Last slide, please. Finally, just to note that at least with respect to the decriminalization of simple possession, that is possession for personal consumption, all states parties to the UN Drug Control Conventions have complete freedom to fully decriminalize simple possession, a proposition that some years ago was controversial, but is now widely recognized that this flexibility does in fact exist in the drug control conventions. Things get a little more complicated when we're talking about decriminalizing small-scale sharing or selling. Nonetheless, there is still some degree of flexibility, albeit not the same degree with respect to simple possession. And it is imperative that states, including Canada, take advantage of that flexibility to the maximum extent as a step toward a larger discussion about what Annie has ultimately mentioned, that is legal regulation of all substances in the interests of public health, human rights, and other considerations.
That was Richard Elliott, Executive Director of the HIV Legal Network. He spoke recently on a panel entitled, We Are the Evidence, Community-Led Responses to Decriminalization, Harm Reduction, and COVID-19, which was organized by the International Network of People Who Use Drugs. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Here's Torbjørn Brekke, Senior Drug Policy Advisor to the Norwegian Ministry of Health and Care Services.
There are several informal and formal forms of contacts and arenas, such as the many councils, the boards, and committees that function as dialogue forum between authorities and voluntary associations at national, at regional, and at local level. This great importance Norwegian authorities attach to civil society participation is also reflected in Norwegian development aid policy by stating that an active and independent civil society is a premise for a democratic and sustainable development of society, and that more than 20% of the development aid assistance budget goes to civil society organizations. Moreover, user participation is now a statutory right in Norway and is thus not something the services apparatus can choose to deal with or not. A relevant example of this is that 2 out of 10 members of the Drug Reform Committee, they were representing people who use drugs. User is thus defined as a person who uses relevant services in one form or another. It's also meant for people who use drugs. User participation can take place at the individual, service, and system level and is regulated by acts. It is a law. It's an obligation. The municipality shall, for example, ensure that representatives of patients and users are consulted in the design of municipalities' health and care services. This has been fundamental in the government's project to create the patient's health service and placing the service receiver in the center under the slogan, "No decision about me without me." As you already might know, there is an initiative towards decriminalization progress in Norway, and with a final decision in Parliament on the 3rd of June this year. The model we will have to come back to if that could be of interest at a later stage. Many actors have pushed and defined this process, and among these are definitely representatives from civil society and especially some specific user organizations. For many years, representatives for people who use drugs was not existing, but invisible and stigmatized. Thus, their voices were not heard. During the last decades, however, we have registered a renewed interest in civil society in general. This development is explained by several factors, and as part of this wave, so-called user organizations have also grown up. One reason for this specific group's growth was probably introduction of a rapidly widespreading of medically assisted treatment. In the beginning, and typically for such movements, they were formed by some very engaged individuals, and those who argued for decriminalization, they were lonely riders, and more often made fools of than taken notice of. Gradually, however, the support for help instead of punishment for use and possession for personal use, call it decriminalization if you prefer, it has gained more and more public acceptance. There are several reasons and motivation behind this national and international movement. What nevertheless is a fact is that the progress in Norway has been accelerated by some very strong and brave voices from user organizations, people who use drugs or have used drugs or representing the people. And the lessons learned is that the interaction between authorities and user organization, the arrangements for users' involvement, the user's professionalism is pointing out a way forward for further collaboration and development.
That was Torbjørn Brekke, Senior Drug Policy Advisor to the Norwegian Ministry of Health and Care Services. He spoke recently on a panel entitled "We Are the Evidence: Community-Led Responses on Decriminalization, Harm Reduction, and COVID-19, which was organized by the International Network of People Who Use Drugs. And that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Thank you to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. Many thanks to our engineer. And of course, thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare. Find Free Culture Radio on the web at kboo.fm/freeculture. Free Culture Radio is on Facebook at facebook.com/kboofreecultureradio. Please give it a like. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!